I got asked to write this story by a friend of mine who works at the Swedenborg Society, just based in Hoban, and he's putting together an anthology of works of short fiction influenced by Emanuel Swedenborg, or about Emanuel Swedenborg, who is a rather obscure 18th century Swedish mystic. So here goes. I suppose by our standards it had been a busy morning. I'd given three people directions, two to the British Museum, one to the MOD building down the road, and even had a paying customer who bought a hardback copy of Heaven and Hell. But every time the door opened, my mouth dried and my heart swelled, and I thought for a moment that it could be her, that it could be Sophie Stone. Even the sibilant slip of her name from my lips brought with it an almost unbearable sense of anticipation. The moaning assonance, a precursor, perhaps, of future pleasures. She said that she would try and call by today to pick up her phone. I'd found it on the bus, tucked into the side of the seat. It had startled me by ringing at my hip just as I was once again drifting off to sleep, as I do on the way home from work, gathering my energies for the more serious labours of the evening ahead. My days unfold with a uniformity that would crush a lesser man, the fool who does not see that routine makes the worst of masters, but the best of slaves. The phone. There I was, squashed against the window by the spilling flanks of a morbidly obese lady who was marking out the time with hollow smoker's breaths. I excavated the phone and looked at the flashing screen with sleepy eyes when, stung into life by a sudden curiosity, I answered it. Hello, who's this? A feminine voice, as soft and round as the letter O, an obvious kindness shrouded only by a haze of concern. I was amazed. This voice belonged to a good person. I could feel it. It was the voice of an angel. My name is Gregor. I found this phone on the number 3 bus. So that's where I lost it. Thank God you found it. It's practically brand new and everything. Thank God I found it. Some of those awful kids started up with their screeching at the back of the bus, and I couldn't hear the next thing that she said. They're completely feral nowadays, these little animals. I gave them a reproving stare. They didn't notice. If it's okay, I thought I'd drop by tomorrow to pick it up. Whereabouts do you work? I explained to her where the Swedenborg Society was. She said she knew Hoban quite well, but she had never seen the bookshop. We've probably passed each other in the street without realising, I said. Yes, maybe. She said that she would call by around lunchtime and thank me once again for being so sweet. I had never considered this sweetness to be one of her primary virtues. What would she think when she discovered what they were? There was a minor disaster when I got home. I realised that I had neglected to stop at the shop on the way home and had thus run out of milk. The first time in 5 years that I had allowed this to happen. The only reasonable explanation was, of course, the consternation caused by the phone. My repast was therefore to be bread alone, but my excitement was such that I lacked any sort of appetite. I was too distracted even to analyse the day's papers. If there were signs today, there would be signs tomorrow, so I put the set square scalpel and albums away. The first thing I did with her phone was call my own number. Once her digits had been flashed up on the screen and been safely stored as... I realised that I didn't know her name. I rang her number from my phone and was pleased that she had an ordinary ringtone, not one of those terrible tinny bits of music that everyone seemed so obsessed with. She was clearly someone of taste. I imagined her bookshelf. She probably hadn't read Swedenborg, but when I explained what he had to say to her, she would understand. A smile settled on my face. When I reached the answer phone, there came the droll rhyme. You have reached the phone of Sophie Stone. She sounded younger than she did when we spoke earlier, and calmer too, of course. I guessed that she was perhaps in her mid-20s. Not insurmountable as an age difference, by any means. Her vivacity and my experience would make a fine combination. I knew the pain that love would bring, and I could be the one to ensure that she never had to find out. For will is love, understanding the wisdom to enact it. Swedenborg teaches us that angels are the embodiments of love and wisdom. It was clear what I would be to Sophie when I became her lover and her teacher. I wondered what else I could learn about Sophie Stone. I read some of her text messages and discovered that her friends were, for the most part, complete imbeciles. Some of them even wrote in that awful text speak, or tuxspuk, as they would no doubt have it. And they must have sorely challenged her patience. The kind of frivolous nonsense they sent messages about included meeting at tacky-sounding bars and something about ferrets on acid. I could see immediately that she must be craving some intelligent company. It's a trap that people fall into. I've seen it happen before. Beholden to your own politeness, suddenly you're surrounded by a group of parasitic barnacles that call themselves your friends. And then they turn you away from yourself, away from what's precious and what's holy, exactly how it happened with Marie. Swedenborg teaches us that spirits in hell are there of their own choosing, that they wallow in pig shit and their own bestiality because it makes them happy, and that if you were to show them heaven, they would recoil in horror. Marie was corrupted by these friends of hers until she was neck deep in the muck. I knew that Sophie was in danger. I could see it would be up to me to save her. Reflecting on the final terror on Marie's face as she asked the last impertinent question, truly the most insipid utterance I'd ever had the misfortune to hear, I was overjoyed at how Sophie's fate was to be so different. So glad was I that one small aberration seemed somehow permissible, and I allowed myself a trip to the shop for milk, so my supper would not be dry. Doing my breathing exercises in bed, it occurred to me that phones have cameras. I reached over to the bedside table to see if I could get a sneak preview of my Sophie. She had only 5 photos on her phone. An old lady featured in 2, simultaneously shriveled and doughy looking, if such a thing were possible. I guessed at the grandmother. She looked harmless enough, if slightly dim. Another photo was of a man. There weren't enough text messages from a single male name to suggest a boyfriend. Brother, maybe. I couldn't tell if he was tall or short. He had one of those handsome but shallow faces, vacant eyes. Probably enjoys football, rock music, and pornography. If this was her family, it was little wonder Sophie was so lonely. The remaining 2 photographs were of the same group of 3 girls. 2 brunettes and a blonde, arms around each other, drinks in front of them, clearly in some sort of bar. Was Sophie one of these, or was she the photographer? It was impossible to say, but my guess was that none of these 3 had the moral fibre I sensed in Sophie. I heard a bell ring just as I was relieving myself. A quick glance at my watch told me it was 1:06, and I just knew that it was her. I didn't wash my hands as she might have found wet hands suspicious. I gave them a quick wipe on the back of my trousers and bounded up the stairs, breathing on my hand to check my breath before fixing a smile on my face. She was inspecting the reproduction portrait of Emanuel Swedenborg with a small hole above his head. I had been right about the photograph. She hadn't featured. Shortish, with a dark brown hair in a bob, she was just as I had remembered her, and stylish too, in a navy coat of elegant cut, a large leather bag slung over her shoulder. Sophie? She turned to me and smiled, and I knew everything was going to be just fine. Hi, she said brightly, before the smile flattened out a little. How did you know my name? Oh, I said, realizing my error. You told me on the phone. It's so nice to meet you. I held out my hand, which she shook. I'd rather hoped I could draw her in for a peck on the cheek, but she was for some reason wary. Perhaps even at her young age, she had already known the pain. I searched her eyes, a precious jade, for evidence, but she averted her gaze. Instead, she looked around the room. It's an amazing little place you have here. I love the high ceilings they have in these old buildings and all the old wood. Yes, it's got a certain atmosphere. You don't seem to have very many books, though, she said, picking up a copy of Wilson van Dusen's The Presence of Other Worlds. A foolish book, it argues that Swedenborg may have been schizophrenic, as if your garden variety lunatic has anything in common with the great man. And they all seem quite specialist. I moved closer so that I was standing right behind her. There were two delightful little moles on the back of her neck and the slightest hint of vanilla in her scent. Her shoulders were tense. They don't call it sexual tension for nothing. Yes, you see, we only sell books by, about, or inspired by Emanuel Swedenborg. She turned to face me, her back to the books. Her eyes were wide and clearly wished for me to continue. He was a great man, easily the greatest of the 18th century, a once-in-a-generation scientific genius who, at the age of 56, was charged by God with explaining the hidden meaning behind the scriptures. "These books here," I said, gesturing towards the Arcana Celestia, "are a 12-volume exegesis on the correspondences in the Old Testament. Personally, I like to think of Swedenborg as an expert in reading between the lines. We have this introductory pamphlet here, if you'd like to take a copy." She accepted the paper with uncommon grace, carefully folded it and put it in her handbag. "Thanks so much, I'll read it later. Look, I don't mean to be rude, but I don't get too long for lunch and there's another errand I have to run." Of course, your phone." I went over to the desk, opened the drawer and produced her phone. Gratitude melted on her face as she took the handset from me and shook it like a prize. "I'd lose my head if it weren't screwed on." "I know the feeling," I said. There was a bead of sweat forming on my temple. I knew I had to say something soon. The moment was slipping away. My tongue tripped and clicked and stuck to the roof of my mouth. Now she was by the door, and finally she held my gaze. She was waiting for me to say something, anything, her lips plump and ever so slightly parted. "Sophie, well, thanks again, I really must be going." At 2:30, I was still sat there replaying the conversation. One moment clutching my phone with thumb poised, the next abandoning it to my desk. I kept half an eye on the pedestrian traffic through the window in the hope I might see her returning. The only conclusion I could reach was that she had sensed my hesitation and seen it as a hesitancy of intent rather than of mere execution. Of course, all was not lost, for I had her number safely stored in my phone. I almost dialed it twice, but felt some invisible hand stopping me. The demons of indecisiveness were still interfering, and I knew my next chance would be my last. I had to hold fire until I was certain I was ready. The first customer of the afternoon came through the door. I could see instantly that he was not going to buy anything. He seemed rather timid, with a kind of toasted almond complexion that could be from anywhere between Romania and Indonesia. There was the faintest wisp of a moustache on his upper lip, and his clothes were suggestive of a down-at-heel student. He picked up a couple of books, The Five Ages and Sigsted's Epic, leafing through them without any real conviction. "Can I help you at all?" I asked. He replied in a weak voice with even weaker English. "Have you Hare Krishna?" "No Hare Krishna, only Swedenborg." "Swedenborg." He looked at me askance and continued his rather absent inspection of the bookshelves. There was something peculiar about this man-boy, though I couldn't place it. There was a lightness in his steps. A serenity exuded from him like delicate perfume. I realized that I didn't resent his presence in the way I did that of most time-wasters. Most time-wasters would probably request some language textbook or tourist guide, but here he was requesting, presumably, the Bhagavad Gita. There was something soothing about the way he drifted through the shop, and now it was as if he were floating towards me. He thrust a scrap of paper in my face and said, "Can you show me where?" The paper contained an Islington address, so I suggested to him that he take the tube. He shook his head. "No, walk." I wanted to demonstrate to him that it was a long walk, that he should take a bus or a tube. I put my phone down on the desk and reached into the drawer for the A to Z. As I tried to find the relevant pages, I realized that there was something I admired about his insistence on walking. Even if the reason for it was that he couldn't afford public transport, there was nevertheless something dignified about it. "Here we are," I said, pointing on the map. "And you want to go here, just next to the angel. It will take you some time. I suppose it's not too far." He thanked me with a smile that revealed all his teeth, slightly yellowed and gappy, but a charming smile nonetheless. I walked into the door and pointed him in the direction of Southampton Row. It was as he turned the corner that I had my epiphany. Did Swedenborg not write in Divine Love and Wisdom that in angels the likeness and image of God clearly appear, since love shines forth in their faces? And where had this curious being asked me to direct him? To angel? And was his reciprocation not clear? Was he not directing me towards an angel of my very own, and consequently directing an angel to one in need of her own? Clarity of purpose and divine love flowed through me as I rushed to the desk to pick up my phone, my tongue loosened and dexterous. Oh, the things I would tell Sophie, her fate and mine entwined like those of love and wisdom, light and heat. But it was not there. My phone was not there. I checked my trouser pockets. Nothing. The pockets of my jacket hung over the back of my chair, also empty. I dialed my number with a landline. It rang through the receiver, but nowhere in the shop. There could be only one explanation. My insides collapsed with the realization of what this so-called angel had done. For it was not just me he had destroyed. This devil had just condemned Sophie Stone.